Hello, wine and food aficionados. Today, I'll have something a little different for you. Italian and Rhone wine varieties will be discussed, but also coffee/espresso, Italian and French-inspired fare. Why don't you join me as we head to Sonoma Valley on the wine road?
I would have never thought this was going to be my life. Pleasantly so. It's been a really incredible journey. And I think as we've grown, we've just kind of focused on things that we wanted to do and then made the space to be able to do it.
The idea to make a wine with a few grapes that we had, it was to sit on a table, have a dinner among us, and have some friends. And it was never meant to be a commercial production.
He's Italian wine and food purveyor Vittorio Belmonte of VJB Cellars in Kenwood. And she is Sandra Bernstein of Girl in the Fig Restaurant in the town of Sonoma. I'm including her in this podcast because Girl in the Fig is world-renowned. People come from all over the globe to visit Girl in the Fig and her other restaurant in Glen Ellen, the Fig Cafe. Details on her fig gigs are coming up. One of our favorite places to visit close to home is VJB Cellars. They craft a good list of Italian varietals. They've come a long way to be where they are today. Vittorio and his wife Maria fulfilled their desire to experience the American dream. Following success after success, unexpected tragedy struck. It challenged their resilience. In time, it provided great inspiration. And now, once again, they're back on top. Unless you're looking for it, it's easy to pass by VJB Cellars as you travel through the roadside town of Kenwood, with the mountains and vineyards grabbing your attention. Because from the road, it just looks like a medium-sized stone tasting room. But if you haven't stopped, you wouldn't realize all that's going on there. They even serve coffee, espresso, and cappuccino. I thought it would be fun to sit one morning with Vittorio over a cappuccino and hear his story.
I wanted to highlight, which I don't think people understand, that you serve coffee, cappuccino, and you have a very nice deli and a marketplace here within your villa here in Kenwood. And even those who might just show up and have a glass or bottle of wine out in the piazza. Do you call it a piazza?
Yes, we call it piazza. It looks like a piazza. It serves like a piazza.
They may not realize all this is going on in here, but if you want a little break from wine in the middle of the day, you can have a cappuccino.
Oh, absolutely. But people, you're right. People don't realize what we have on the back over here because they go by the highway and they see a new building and they think that's it. But when they come inside, that's when they really... It's amazing, you know, what's behind these walls.
It's like a little town square because you have the gelato space. You serve pizza out there, and then you have your larger space where you have your barrel room and also have large parties.
We call them like a little piazza. It's a little town. And as a matter of fact, it's different little stores. They give you the impression that you go in a little town, a little central square, and you have a gelato, you have a coffee, you have an ice cream, or, you know, whatever you're looking for.
And you have Tommy Bahama, too, don't you?
We do have a Tommy Bahama, yes. I love Tommy Bahama.
Is that why it's there?
Yeah, that's why it's there. So I can shop.
Oh, great. And I'm guessing you get a discount.
No, I don't. Have a discount. No break on me. They're making me pay... ahead of time and full price.
Oh, that's too bad. Do you still have the wandering Italian singers in the summertime?
Yes, we do.
That's kind of an unexpected surprise when you're here and all of a sudden they start wandering around and playing. They have an accordion.
It's an accordion and two singers. Yeah. It's not a big band. It's very, very quiet, very nice. When Harry hired these people, I thought, oh, geez, well, who's going to listen, you know, the opera sing and the accordion? But I was completely wrong.
People seem to love it.
People just come and stay the hours and, of course, then, you know, they have a good time. They have a sandwich, they have a pizza or a bottle of wine, and they just enjoy it.
Yeah. And you ended up having a restaurant downtown, which preceded my arrival here in Santa Rosa. And it was downtown Santa Rosa, not here in Kenwood. And that went for quite a while. Cafe Portofino?
There was a Cafe Portofino. We opened up in 87. And it was a real success restaurant. It was a beautiful. We We were so fortunate to meet so many people and be right at downtown, and that's what our name and really we got the benefit of that. Mm-hmm.
Things were progressing well with the Belmontes at Portofino. Henry and his brother Victor began making wine on the side. Then sadly, Victor suddenly passed away. It hit them so hard, they chose to close the restaurant and move back to Kenwood, where they once had a small deli.
We just, it looked like somebody hit on our head. We just lost all interest in the restaurant, lost the conversation with the people, and we felt like, hey, we need to get out of here.
That's too bad you lost your focus, and what a tragedy.
Well, that was a tragedy, but unfortunately, you know, happened, and there's nothing we can do about, and you just have to look ahead and remember the past, but, you know, just go on with your life and other kids' life and grandkids' life as well. This was a really a good move for us. We've been successful here, but it was a move that we had to do it.
Did you have wine initially with the deli or the restaurant downtown? Were you making your own then, or did you just start that when you built this larger place?
My two sons, Henry and Victor, in 99, they started making wine. But the idea to make a wine with a few grapes that we had, it was to we can enjoy it. You know, sitting on the table, have a dinner among us, and have some friends. And it was never meant to be a commercial production. Hmm. But then when he passed away, Henry said, well, Victor wants to make a wine, and we're going to be making wine, and we're going to use a initial for our label. And that's when all that started.
Yeah, a VJB, is that Victor's initials?
VJB is a Victor Joseph Belmonte.
Yeah, what a nice tribute. So in a sense, it provided some drive and some motion to do something for him, and that's what turned this into a great success.
Well, again, we don't feel like we do this commercially, that our wine has got to be every single restaurant or wine shop like most of the winery do, you know. But we do more for tribute. We do more for the passion that we have for him and you know, and for the people. Everything we do, we put all ourselves in. As you've been coming here and see me, you know, I'm here 7 days a week. From 6 o'clock in the morning, open up for the people, come do cleaning and meet somebody, and then I go home at 5 o'clock at night.
And he's not kidding either. He explained why it's no problem for him to be there every day.
You said you're used to getting up early and working since you were a kid.
Well, when I was a kid, there was no clock. So it was the sun. When you see lights, that means that it's time to get up and go to work. When you can't see in the field, it's time to go home, have a dinner, and then go to bed. There was no television, was no piazza. You can go out and talk to other people, friends, or kids.
So winter was your favorite season?
Winter was my favorite season in a way that there was a short day. But also was tough for us because the only heating that we have in the house was the fireplace. And the fireplace doesn't go every room,
right.
Even though we have downstairs and upstairs. So that was a family house.
What town was that?
There was a little town called Bonito. It's in the province of Avellino in the Campania region.
And when did you emigrate over here?
We came here in 1963, April 3rd.
Do you have a plan? Or?
Well, the only plan that I had was that I wanted to just come in the United States and do something. You know, Italy in those days was so poor, especially where I grew up, it was nothing to do. You know, all work on the farm, which I hate work on the farm. Mm-hmm. So I came here and I'd give all I can to work every single day, Sunday, Monday, whatever. You know, I had a job, I will do it. I never regret. Italy is always Italy. It's always like a mother to me. But I'm so fortunate and so grateful for this country that only for this country we'd be able to be what we did, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's why so many people want to still come here to this day.
Well, people sometimes I hear them that complaining in the U.S. this and that, but the people that complain about the United States, they are those people that never left the United States. You need to go in different country, but not as a tourist, because a tourist, even if you go in a slum of the country, you still feel like you see something different and you feel good about. You need to be there and try to make a living to really understand what those countries are and the difference between our country here, United States, versus other country in the world.
When did you meet Maria?
Oh, I met Maria in the 1953.
So she came with you?
She came. She's come from the same town that I grew up. We met over there, and then we hang around for 6-7 years. I went in the army. She left the town. She went to work in Piemonte in Torino. And then his father in 59, I believe, he came in this country. And then Maria came in 61.
Okay. So she was already here when you arrived.
She was already here when I came. But she came and picked me up. She came in Italy. We got married in Italy in 62.
Okay.
And she had to come here before she turned 21. Mm. Otherwise, it would be she couldn't come with this family.
Right. And then how did you make it out here to California?
In California, we came in 1976. When I came in 63, we landed in Boston. We spent 12 years in Boston. I did everything as possible to get adjusted in the climb. Beautiful city, Boston. It's more European than any other state that I ever see, city. But the cold was just too much for me. Mm, right. I couldn't stand the cold. So in 76, we decided, let's go to California. We came to California. We came right in San Francisco. We drove up to Santa Rosa, San Jose. And we just love Santa Rosa, and we settled in Santa Rosa. Huh.
And it was in 83 when you opened the restaurant? But you had the deli before that here in Kenwood.
We had the deli in Kenwood.
So was the food based on Maria's talents and her skills?
The food, they were based on Maria's recipe, based on the way we were making food homes. Mm-hmm. It was not a greater repertory of a recipe. They were just a simple recipe that she accumulated from her mother and his grandmother and friends. But, like I said before, they were not the greatest presentation, but the taste and the freshness of the food was what the people really like.
Right. So getting back to the wine, was it the Dante that was the original blend?
The Dante was the first blend that we made. And when we made the Dante came after few things that had happened in Vita life. He was engaged and he's supposed to get married the following year. And he already picked up the name of the, if it was a son, it would be Dante. If it was a girl, it would be Maria. So not this happened. Also, he likes this favorite wine that was the Sangiovese and the Cabernet. So Henry figured out that, Dante is a Tuscany rider. He liked the Cabernet. He liked the Sangiovese. So we tried to make a blend with the Sangiovese and the Cabernet, and really come out an incredible wine. People were loving. Soon we released, it sold out and very quick, because it's a Tuscan, almost like a super Tuscan.
Right, the elements of a super Tuscan.
Exactly.
Wow, that's one of my favorites, too.
Except in the American version.
Right. And you're still making that.
We do still make, yes. Yeah.
But you sure have increased your wine portfolio, haven't you? You've got all kinds of wonderful Italian varietals.
Well, we increased our portfolio because most of the variety are very small cases. We make some that there are 200 cases, 150 cases, 300 cases. So in order to have enough wine to supply the demand, we had to branch out to some other varietal, also because some of the varietal nobody ever heard of. Mm-hmm. And they are an incredible wine. It's just you need to know, you need to know how to make them. And that's why we branch out a different varietal.
We bought several when we were here last, and the one that really stood out to us was the Freya?
Freya is a wine that is more grown in the Piemonte area in North Italy. Again, we find those varietals, and I say, oh my God, a Freya! Nobody else has a Freya. It's an incredible wine. And
yeah, where did you find that?
It's funny because it's a grower in Mendocino. He's an even Italian, and he grows a bunch of Italian varietal, and that's why we find this varietal. The same with the Tokaj. You know, nobody grow Tokaj in this area,
right.
But Mendocino they do also because the climate is a little better for those type of wine.
And you have Prosecco here.
It's a very good varietal, and we bring them from Italy, already made to our specification, but it's made in Italy.
Oh, great. I did not understand that.
Yeah, that's the only wine that we not make it.
Well, if you're going to choose one to have it authentic, that's a good one to have.
That's correct.
Oh, great. Well, I'll tell you, you guys are right here off Highway 12 in Kenwood. It's a great spot, and I've seen it crowded and sometimes not so much, and I'd like to get the word out about this place because VJB Cellars offers some fantastic wine, and as I mentioned, there's a lot more going on here than you can tell from the road.
Well, we appreciate that, and we feel the same way, that when the people come here, they just relax. They have a good time. And that's making me so happy than anybody come here and buy a case of wine and then is not happy. So for me, the people that come here, have a glass of wine, we chat, ask where they come from, where I come from. And, I mean, it's a conversation there. We meet a lot of people here, and the people come back after 2-3 years, come back, and then all of a sudden we have people say, oh, you know, my cousin was here 2 years ago, he told me they had to come here. Oh, that's wonderful.
What a pleasant man, Vittorio Belmonte of VJB Cellars in Kenwood. Stop in next time you're driving by. Vittorio will be there. They're also at vjbcellars.com. Next, this Wine and Food on the Wine Road podcast continues east as we meet up with Sandra Bernstein of Girl and the Fig Restaurant in the town of Sonoma after this oh-so-short break. Welcome back. And now, something new for the On the Wine Road podcast, an informative feature delving into the details of the Nectar of the Gods. It's time for Wine Uncorked. If you happen to have an issue with wine, even the discussion of it, or if you experience unexplained anxiety when you go out to restaurants or bars, you may have a wine phobia called enophobia. It really does exist. Like those who fear cats, the number 13, or going outdoors, there are those who suffer from the thought or sight of wine. For some, it's associated with the fear of alcoholic beverages or intoxication. For others, the fear may stem from having to choose wine for a party. Heaven forbid you pick a bad wine and are blamed by the host. The fear can also be attributed to those who are unable to control the symptoms of intoxication. Now, if you're listening to this podcast, you are more likely an enophile, a lover of wine. And to that I say, may you forever drink wine with ease. Now, on to my second interview. I cannot believe we are already halfway through 2019. How time flies, frighteningly so. I also cannot believe it's been over 4 years since I first interviewed Sandra Bernstein of the highly popular Girl and the Fig restaurant, the Fig Cafe, her Sweet D pop-up party location, and the Fig Rig. Recently, I sat down with her to go over their plans of celebrating International Rosé Day. The celebration has passed, but the rest of the interview is worthy of being on the podcast, as I reach back to share her story once again. She and her partner, John, offer country food prepared with French passion, with a wine list that focuses on Rhone varietals. They've had exceptional success, but it started with humble beginnings.
You know, when we first started, I couldn't afford a big wine list. And it wasn't like, oh my God, I want to do this Rhone-Alone wine list. It really wasn't that. But we were trying to write a cohesive list to open the restaurant with. And I literally couldn't afford more than 12 wines. You know, it was going to be one of those things where we would open and I would pay COD for everything. And when I could afford something more, then I would buy that. And it was going to really grow organically. And it did. And so when we were working on wine lists, it was like, okay, what's the politically correct list? You know, everything a mile from the restaurant. Wasn't really original, you know, wasn't any different from our next door neighbors or things like that. And then wouldn't it be great if we could have, you know, Opus One and things that, and they're like, no, they had never heard of us. Why would they give us any of that? And the other thing, John and I had also come from me 4 years and him, I think 3 years from Vianza Winery, which is Italian winery, so over Italian wines. At that time, so I'm like, okay, let's go back where I feel a little bit more comfortable. And kind of at the time, we were doing a menu tasting. I came down and I grabbed every bottle of Rhone varietal that the wine shop had and brought them back. And we tasted through all the wines with the different food. And I said, you know, this is kind of, this would make a very short, comprehensive list. We knew that our education ability in talking about wine as an educational welcome to the area, we could do that. And I really believe that telling a story is so important for people that want to listen to a story. Not everybody goes out to eat because they want to hear it, but what can we add to their experience in wine country? And I'm going to replicate what they're going to get every day. So we really found these wines to be true to their food friendliness. And I figured, what would be the worst thing? You know, if in 2 months I have to order a case of Chardonnay and you know, if I can't hold up, I have to admit, you know, Kendall Jackson at the time was making a Viognier that was a very shard-like. And we use that as a bridge to really teach people and say, you know Chardonnay because that's what you hear. That's what, you know, you see everywhere. That's what you're exposed to, or Cabernet or Zinfandel. But if I let you taste this and you can like it just for what it is, and then I tell you that it's a Viognier, will you maybe consider ordering a Viognier or trying a new Viognier? And that's really how we train our staff, and that's how we approach it. And
train your customers.
And train our guests and actually, you know, kind of expose them to things that we love. I think that the options and the flights, we do a lot of wine flights and giving people the chance to taste a lot and to expose people to something new is fabulous.
So these days, Sandra, you hear terms like seasonal menu, locally sourced, farm to table. But you've been doing this kind of thing since 1997.
That's true. And it's funny because I was just thinking the other day that farm to table sounds so cliche, but it is really kind of the way of life. And it's especially in the last 4 years we've been farming. We farm a little bit over 3 acres. And so we're really taking a different appreciation, a different look on what it's really like, what the farmers go through, the vintners go through, and how nature affects what comes out of the ground. And the ability to work in a biodynamic and organic property has been pretty incredible.
Well, it has become a cliche, but it's something that we're very fortunate to have at our disposal here in this area of the country.
Oh, without question. I mean, we have the best of the best. And, you know, I kind of ended up here, started in Philadelphia and worked my way out to L.A., living in L.A., came up here on vacation and just had to go to every little food thing that was happening in wine tasting and farmers market. And this is back in 92, 93. And my partner at the time, he wanted to go to every beer brewing. You know, there was enough for both of us, yeah, even then. And I just really realized that if I was going to stay in the restaurant business and be in with food, that why shouldn't I be close to the source? And I think that has inspired me more than anything. And just when it comes down to it, we kind of are trying to stay with the basics and just be a little bit simpler. We want to be informed and knowledgeable. We want to give our guests the best experience that we can and really show off what's already here without turning it into something different.
Well, that brings me to my next question, because one of your signature dishes is the fig and arugula salad, which includes toasted pecans, pancetta, goat cheese, and grilled figs. And that's so simple, but it's so delicious.
Yeah, and it's the exact recipe from day one when we opened. You know, figs, though, the grilled fig part can only happen when they're in season. And, you know, luckily we have two harvests of that. But in, you know, off season, we use dried figs, organic figs, and, you know, we know where they come from. And it's a salad that is not only about flavor, but it's also about texture. It's about trying to capture that perfect bite of creamy goat cheese and crispy pancetta and toasty nut, you know, and that spicy green.
So what's the fascination with figs?
Oh,
is it because you can do so much with them or what?
You know, it's definitely, I have a fig fetish, and, you know, it gets bigger each year. But the truth is, I was sitting across the street under the big fig tree outside years and years ago, doodling on a cocktail napkin, playing with names. I had already signed the lease on the property in Glen Ellen. I knew I was going to open, and, you know, we're doing it quick in like 30 days. And the girl in the vine, the girl in the grape, the girl in the fig, the girl in the fig, plop, fig falls, you know, literally, you know, a foot away. And kind of, I was like, oh my God, that sounds really good. And I like the sing-song way of like an English pub would sound, the fox mm-hmm. and the hound. Right. I like that. I think that just kind of rolls off the tongue. And the reality is that figs, you know, were really something that was relatively new, not a year or 2 years, but 1819, I think I had my first fig, fresh fig, and was really captivated. But certainly after, you know, creating the restaurant and the brand, it's definitely more marketing and more, it has a bigger importance.
Well, the wine list that we talked about earlier is such an important element to your restaurant. Your food, of course, is fantastic. So together, it's an exceptional arrangement.
Thank you. It's very fun. You know, we do have some algorithms for the way we want the list as far as how much has to come from Sonoma, how much has to be under $60, how much can be, you know, I think that's really important to have a fine balance. Mm-hmm. But I think also to work with the educational value to have enough to offer. You know, some of the big, big cabs, you know, you could taste five of them in a row, and it's very hard to distinguish the, you know, when it's a trophy wine, it's a trophy wine. And I think there could be days I sit and do a blind tasting and I would guess something wrong anyway. So I think it needs to be fun. I think wine country, people come here to be happy and to have fun and to learn something.
You say you want your restaurant to be the perfect balance of quirky and elegant, and I think you've set the tone and you've established that.
I think so. I think I want it to be something where people can remember it for, you know, what it was, like having a good experience. Wherever, whether it's a wine they never tasted or a cheese from somewhere or, you know, just someone taking the time to care about someone's day, I think. Or really just a really good meal is good, too. So I think so. I think we're doing it.
Most certainly. As you can tell, that interview was recorded in the restaurant. Now we'll jump ahead about 4 years and move to the offices of Girl in the Fig. 2 years ago, they celebrated their 20th anniversary. So I started this interview on a congratulatory note.
Thank you. I can't even believe it. Time's flying.
Your partner, John, and you have been together since day one. And I mean, that alone in that amount of time is a feat in itself. So your relationship has remained strong.
Yeah, we're doing pretty good. 25 years. We had about 3 years at Fianza. And he is now the president, so he's, you know, makes a lot of the decisions and kind of let him do his thing. And I'm more on the marketing event, you know, kind of like our pop-ups and things like that.
I have to say, by complete coincidence, my wife and I went by Girl in the Fig yesterday. We live in Santa Rosa. We were in the area. So I said, hey, let's go by, have a glass and eat a little bit of food. We got there about 2:30 thinking, well, maybe we'll hit a lull. And there was a lull because there were two seats open on the couch and two at the bar.
So did you stay?
We did stay.
Oh, was everything good?
Oh, of course.
Oh,
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
I'm so glad. Yeah, yeah. Such a busy weekend.
That's a lull when you can get four open seats at Grill and the Fig. And I'm just talking about the bar.
Right.
Which we really enjoy sitting in there. But I don't want to scare people away because those who did come in that wanted to sit in the restaurant were seated fairly soon. So it wasn't like people
it wasn't
are
too bad.
Milling.
Yeah. You know, we open up the patio based on weather, usually like 3 days before. So people like will say, oh, we couldn't get in. And I'm like, well, when did you try? Like, oh, a month ago. Try 3 days before, 2 days before, because usually we open the patio and that's a good amount of seats that open up. So like if you wanted to go Saturday, if you tried today, we might be booked. But then if you tried on Thursday, we would have opened the patio if we knew it was going to be sunny.
Okay.
So it's like insider secret.
You have those, don't you?
One or two, not many.
It's like the one at the Big Cafe. You said, the regulars know the secret.
Yeah, exactly. They know what time. They know what time to come.
Which is make sure you're there about 5:30.
Yeah.
Then you don't have to wait.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. When we last spoke, you had pretty much just started Sweet D, and it's a fun pop-up place.
It was interesting because this past weekend, I had friends in that were in from Philadelphia, and we had a party of 12 that we were going to have at the restaurant, but of course, we were on the patio. And because of the weather, I'm like, oh my God, you know, I can't guarantee that we're not going to be soaked.
Yeah.
So Sweet D was not booked that night, and so we were really lucky Sunday night and had a really nice dinner for 15 people. It was awesome.
Does that mean you had to call John to see if you can get in?
No, actually, I still make a few of my own decisions.
Okay. For a little while now, you've had the Fig Rig, and what a great idea that is.
Yeah, Tuesday nights, we're in Sonoma on the plaza with the truck, and then we do lots of winery events and some festivals, and we were just at actually Bottle Rock with the pizza oven. So we're busy.
It's a nice outreach program because you can tease people with what you can do and like, well, come down to the restaurant sometime.
Exactly. And also it's a really nice moving billboard when it's driving around.
Nice.
If people know our brand and our colors, they kind of put two and two together.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you and John started 22 years ago or so, at least with the Fig restaurants, could you imagine the depth of success that you would have by this point? I mean, you have so many things going on, and most of them are incredibly successful.
Oh, thank you. No, I would have never thought this was going to be my life. I had no idea, actually. Pleasantly so. It's been a really incredible journey. And I think as we've grown, we've just kind of focused on things that we wanted to do and then made the space to be able to do it. So when John wanted to learn how to make charcuterie, you know, he had somebody that could fill his job, you know, working the line or whatever he was doing, and made that space. And when I wanted to start working on the cookbook years ago, was able to, you know, make the space. So it's definitely been fun. Hasn't all been easy.
Of course not.
Yeah. Yeah, but you have to, you know, good and the bad go together. But very, very grateful for a wonderful staff and an amazing community. And, you know, we still keep preaching Sonoma, getting people to visit.
My listeners heard from the earlier interview your humble beginnings with buying wine on COD and how you started. I mean, having just a Rhone list is pretty niche. So,
it was 22 years.
So you survived that, what could have been a problem.
Could have been a problem. Some people, it probably is still a problem, you know, but, you know, corkage is such a easy thing in wine country, you know, and certainly anybody that wants to drink, you know, Pinot or Zin or Cab or whatever, they can bring it. They're not going to find it on our list, so it's never going to be an issue that way. But I love drinking all those wines, but it's been really nice having a focus. Some people focus just small producers. Some people focus, you know, like tying right into their food or, you know, and it's been nice having like a concentration. It's done us well. We've met a lot of wonderful people and gives us a reason to write off our trip to France every year or so. But Yeah, it's been really cool. And the wines are getting better and better, I think. I mean, some beautiful people are doing some beautiful things.
And it's nice that you help out the little guy, too. There's plenty on your list of just really small producers, like Idle Cellars.
Yeah.
I know Ben pretty well.
And yeah, he's great.
He's limited, but love his Grenache.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Mathis,
yeah. I mean, for a while, I felt like we were his tasting room. You know, you could really only get it at the Fig, and now he's expanded, and he's making more wines, and his rosé is beautiful, and...
And you can run into Peter there too.
He was there last night.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
See, I missed him by just a few hours.
Probably. Huh. Yeah.
You know, I love Grenache, and I just saw an article recently comparing or saying that Grenache and the Spanish variety, Garnacha, can be served with every course because the variety is so versatile.
Exactly. I mean, we have Grenache Blanc. Well, just in the varieties, you have Grenache Blanc, Grenache Gris, and Grenache Noir. So you could have, you know, red, pink, and a white. But also in the Grenache Noir, or as we know it more, Grenache, like our Grenache is so light and it's so delicate. And it's been coming out of Mendocino from the Sawyer Vineyard. And for three vintages, it's just been like really delicate. And then other Grenaches you drink, you open it up and they're big fruit bombs in your face and, you know, scrumptious. So I really believe that if you blind taste Grenache, you're not always going to know it was a Grenache. Yeah. I think there's so much, and it's sturdy, and I think it's forgiving, and it's such a good grape.
Sonder Bernstein of Girl and the Fig Restaurant in Sonoma, preparing country food with a French passion. As I mentioned earlier, eating in their bar area, which has a couple of couches and chairs, in addition to bar seating, is nearly as enjoyable as the restaurant. It has a nice vibe. If you're intrigued by what she creates, Sandra has a couple of cookbooks on the market, Girl and the Fig Cookbook and Plats du Jour. You can find them and a pantry full of other items and information at thegirlandthefig.com. Girl and the Fig and the Fig Cafe in Glen Ellen are dining options to keep on your list for locals and for those of you listening outside of town who may be planning a visit to Northern California wine country. We look forward to seeing you. That brings this podcast to a close. I'm on Instagram and Twitter at JDWineRoad, and you'll find more on my website, onthewineroad.us. Music on today's show by Rob Backshaw, Sam Maverick, and Teddy Lazary. I'm Jeff Davis, wishing you safe journeys and fantastic wine and food as you travel on the wine road. I'll see you out there.